Well, there's lots of things we can do without. Sometimes we find out what we can do without, whether we want to or not. But we end up with sort of the irreducible minimums of the human life. And one of them is water. And as we're looking at least a couple of our texts today, water plays a very sizable role. When you look at our Old Testament, reading in Exodus, we see again the people of Israel complaining. And once again, we tend to look at things from the perspective of knowing the end of the story, which isn't the end of the world, but sometimes we miss some things, or we draw some perhaps errant conclusions about some of the players in the story. And we often hear about Moses having to deal with the fractious people of Israel. And I'm not saying they weren't fractious, but I don't know how many of you have actually been thirsty in your life. For the most part, when we're thirsty, it's because we haven't had whatever we wanted to drink the second we wanted to drink it. Sometimes it's a little bit longer than that for one reason or another. I don't think I've ever really been thirsty other than when I've had some test that I couldn't even drink water for 3 or 4 hours or something, and that's about the limit of it. But being thirsty isn't very much fun. It's something that we try and avoid. And so when the people of Israel are complaining, they're not complaining over nothing. They're not complaining that Moses told them that, they couldn't work on Sundays. They're not complaining that they had to give up their television for a week. They're complaining because they had nothing to drink. And having nothing to drink is a really unpleasant place to be in. Now, there are other things going on in this passage, of course, that one of the reasons why we look somewhat sideways at the people of Israel is that they seem to keep forgetting that God has taken care of them whenever they've needed care. And for that, I suppose they're guilty, and that we can look at them from that particular perspective. But let's not lose sight of the fact that what the people of Israel were asking for was a real and a legitimate need. It was something they had to have. There are loads of things we want but don't need. We don't need houses of a particular size, but we need shelter. We require shelter. We don't need, fill in the blank for your favorite food, whatever it might be, steaks or caviar or whatever it is. We don't need that, but we absolutely require food. And we don't need, my children really don't need energy drinks, although they need to find energy some other way, I suppose. We don't need to drink pop or even coffee or anything else, but we absolutely require water in some form. And so when the people of Israel are asking for something, they're not asking for an optional part of their life. They're saying, we have to have this. Well, thirst is one of those things that you can't live with very long. If there's something you desperately want, a new car, your team to win some game or something else, you can sort of put that at the back of your mind for great parts of your day. You just don't even think about it. The things that we absolutely require, when they get to a particular point, that's all you're going to think about. Somebody's at least once has talked about the 3-3-30 rule, which is a rule of thumb, is that human beings can do without air for 3 minutes, water for 3 days, and food for 30. It's a little bit different depending on who you are. But if you've ever held your breath on purpose or because you fell in water that was deeper than you thought, you know that after a fairly short period of time, you're not really thinking about anything except air. And if you've been without water, so I've been told, I've never been to this extremity, after a period of time, that's all you think about. So when the people of Israel came to Moses and said, we need water, it's because that's what they needed. It wasn't something that they just wanted that they thought would be pleasant. And then God miraculously intervened and provided the water. But I'm more interested in this whole notion of thirst. When we look at our New Testament lesson, or our gospel lesson, it all centers around, in a physical sense, it centers around a well. I can still remember pumping water for my grandma. It was fairly convenient. My grandfather, taking care of his wife, actually piped in a pump into the kitchen. So you didn't have to go out somewhere. It was a little pump. It was actually kind of cute, as I recall. And so for those of us who are used to just flipping a tap, it was kind of fun to pump water. But water is a really critical thing. Your world can center around it at particular stages. And here we have a well. And Jesus is sitting by this well. And a woman comes to get water at a very peculiar time of the day. She's there in the middle of the day. You don't get water in the middle of the day. It's hot. It's unpleasant. You get water in the evening. It's less likely to evaporate on the way back. There's just lots of reasons to not do it then. Unless this is the only time you can be there and not have people look down on you and pass remarks about you, which presumably is why the Samaritan woman was there in the middle of the day. And she was there not because she had nothing better to do, but because she was caring for the absolute vital requirements of life. Water. And Jesus, as he so often does, takes something that's inescapable in the physical world and helps us think about spiritual realities through that same lens. One of the obvious aggravations of a place with no running water is going and getting it every day, which is why people who work in bringing water to communities that don't have it, and I've known several over the years, talk about it as an absolutely life-changing thing for that village or that group of people. In some places, what it means is that you no longer spend 2 hours each way getting water. I mean, whatever your commute is, it's usually just to work. It's not to get what you have to have to the extent that you have to have water. But imagine that, walking 2 hours to get water and then 2 hours to come back. Every day. And so when someone comes in and lays some pipe, puts in a filtration system, and suddenly you have water right where you live whenever you want it, I mean, imagine what an incredible change that would make. And so when Jesus talks to this woman and says, well, you're coming here every day, but I can give you living water, it's not too surprising that she jumps to a very physical, a very corporeal world conclusion and says, well, that sounds pretty good. I don't want to have to come here every day. And Jesus says, no, this is living water. This is something else. And from there, he moves into another direction, talking about who she was and what she needed to do. But he approached it through water, through thirst. One of the things you can actually do is you can live in such a way that you can ignore the requirements of your physical self for at least a period of time. It's possible that you can actually get dehydrated while you're still consuming liquid if you make poor liquid choices. If you're drinking highly caffeinated beverages, it takes you a lot more of them, a lot longer, to get properly hydrated, assuming it works at all. Depending on how you personally metabolize caffeine, you might actually be sort of taking a step backwards as you're drinking this. Even drinking distilled water isn't very good for you, so I've been told. One person told me that you could become dehydrated while drinking that. I don't know whether it's true or not. But you can ignore these kinds of things for a period of time, but eventually they'll just take over. And you will then start doing whatever you possibly can to drink. People in these extremities are the people who drink muddy water, who drink whatever is there because they have to have something. And Jesus pulls this back into the spiritual world and, using at least secondarily the analogy of thirst, says that when you're that thirsty, you will do whatever you can to drink. And we all have thirsts of various kinds. We have the physical ones, And we can sort of subsume all of our physical requirements in there, food, water, shelter. We're now realizing that meaningful relationships are just as important to life and to thriving as those other things. But we can have other requirements that we are just as thirsty for. People sometimes talk about a God-shaped hole within us all. It's a handy little image that says that there's something missing until that's filled. And I think that's a good way to think of it. We have other holes, by the way. I had a Heather-shaped hole within me that I didn't know was there till I found her. And then went, oh, so that's what was missing. But when we're looking for something that we need, that's what we want to get. Offering a piece of bread to someone who's thirsty just isn't helpful. It's actually kind of unkind. And people who mistake their thirst for hunger might even try eating instead of drinking when that's what they need. And when we start looking at this from a spiritual perspective, when we look at the thirst that we have, it's possible that first of all, we can ignore the thirst or say that it's something else, mistake it for some other need. And then it's also possible that we can try and fulfill this thirst or meet this thirst in ways that aren't helpful. Ways that cause more problems maybe even than they solve. If you're really thirsty and you choose to drink scotch whiskey to take care of an actual thirst, you might not be thirsty, but you're also not going to be sober anymore. If you choose to drink tainted water because it's more convenient or because that's what you see first, you might not be thirsty anymore, but you might be sick also. And the spiritual thirst that we all have, and we all have one, if we go to the wrong place to deal with this thirst, we can run into the same kind of problems. Jesus makes it fairly clear that the Samaritan woman is missing something in her life, which she tried to replace it with husbands. And that's a lot of husbands. I mean, five, goodness sakes. What did somebody say? You can see how having one spouse and then misplacing it, in this case he's talking about somebody who's multiply divorced, misplacing one or two is understandable, but after that it's just rank carelessness. Yeah, like five is just, there's really something going on. And what Jesus is alluding to here is that if we try and meet particular needs without going to the source of what we actually require, the need will still be there. If you're thirsty and hungry at the same time, and you eat, you won't be hungry anymore, but you'll still be thirsty. And if you think that, well, I felt something, I felt hunger, so maybe I'll just keep eating more instead of drinking, you'll even become overfull, but you're still going to be thirsty. You need to go to what it is that you actually need. And no matter what my children might believe about the efficacy of pop and iced tea and energy drinks, when you're thirsty, really, the best thing you can do is drink water. We seem to have been created for water to be a good thing for us when we are dehydrated, and you should drink water. When you have a spiritual thirst, you should go to the source that will meet that need. Multiple partners will perhaps hide that need, will perhaps make it harder to feel that thirst, in the same way that if you're hungry and thirsty, or if you're thirsty, eating something will help. If you're thirsty and you have nothing else, putting a small pebble in your mouth will help you feel less thirsty, but it doesn't make you any less dehydrated. It doesn't create water in your mouth. It doesn't work that way. It just makes you feel better. But if you have a spiritual thirst and you try and deal with it in other ways, you're just going to mask it. And at some point, you're going to have to come to grips with the fact that what you need is to address that actual thirst. And what Jesus said to the Samaritan woman is that if you go in the wrong directions to deal with your spiritual thirst, you'll just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, just like coming to get water. But Jesus will address that fundamental thirst in a way that you don't have to go and find it somewhere else. It's there within you. It bubbles up like a well that's always there. Most of us have taken the opportunity, probably all of us, to invite Jesus into our lives in meaningful ways. That living well, that living water is within us. But we still have to drink it. Just because you have running water doesn't mean that you're never thirsty. You still have to go to the tap. You still have to turn it on. You still have to put it in a cup and drink it. And if you're thirsty and you don't feel like getting up and you eat potato chips instead, you're probably not helping yourself. The spiritual thirst that we have access to what can meet that thirst, can assuage that thirst. But if we try and cover that up or try and meet it in any other way, even though we have that living water within us, we'll still be thirsty until we come back to that source, till we come back and drink from that well. Even those of us who have been in the faith for a long time can think that what we really want is cup of coffee, when what we need is water. We can go other places to meet our spiritual needs. We can think that what I really need is another book, another television program, another podcast, something else to listen to. But what we need is Jesus. These other things are all good. They're all fine. But the need is for Jesus, who wells up within us, who meets that thirst in the only way that will actually meet it. And no matter how long we've been in the faith, we might think that this time the thirst will be met with, we can meet the thirst with something else. But Jesus says, no, you need to come to me, the living water that's in you already, and drink here so that you won't be thirsty anymore. Amen.